Time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. With us today is Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, thanks for joining the program today.
Glad to be here.
Also on the line with us is Jonathan Ellis, news reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, it's nice to talk with you again as well.
Greetings, Carl.
Well, yesterday, the federal Medicaid chief told state officials that Governor Dugard's request for a partial Medicaid expansion wouldn't be allowed. The governor had asked for permission to expand Medicaid to cover people up to 100% of the poverty line. The Affordable Care Act calls for states to expand it to 133%. Given that a similar request from last year was rejected, Roger, was this much of a surprise?
Well, I don't know if it was a surprise. From what I heard, the federal people were actually listening for a while to South Dakota's proposal, and nothing in the Affordable Care Act has really been etched in granite. So I think they went in with the best of intentions that this might go through.
Jonathan Ellis, do you agree with that? That this was with the best of intentions, not just say a political move on the part of the Republicans in the state?
Well, I'm sure there's some politics behind all of this as well, but you know, I think that as Roger said, there have been a lot of changes since the law was passed. A lot of the mandates, timelines have been extended, that sort of thing, sort of unilaterally by the administration. So I thought, you know, they may have had an opportunity to get this flexibility. I mean, after all, it would have, I think, meant coverage for about 26,000 people who would have qualified at the 100% or at the 100% level. So, you know, if your interest was in trying to expand health coverage, I mean, I think that the federal government missed an opportunity there. But at the same time, it would have been, at the end of the day, there's a reason why the federal government had 133%, and it works with the subsidies that are available for people between 100 and 133%. And it's more expensive for the federal government to, you know, offer subsidies, for people between 100 and 133%, and it's cheaper for the state to have them on the exchanges. So, I mean, I think the federal government had to look at that and say, well, you know, if we did this for everybody, it's going to be a lot more expensive.
Looking at this issue from the state legislature, there's, about a week and a half left. Roger, do you think that anything will happen with this issue for this session yet, or do you think this is an issue that will just be continuing for a while?
Well, I think it might have seen the end of it for this session. They were a little worried about the timeline, even when they proposed this, that we were so close to the end of the session that the waiver process that the government has to go through, there would not be enough time to get that in place, and it's not getting any earlier now. So I would think it might be done for this session.
Jonathan Ellis, does it seem like this is the done for this session?
Toast. Tim Rabe, who's in a Republican leadership, he's basically saying he thinks it's done for this session, and then, you know, that's going to take it. That will make it a political issue in the upcoming campaign, and you know, the Democrats been very forceful of their belief that it should be expanded to the 133% level, although they were willing to go to 100%. But this puts it into politics.
Is this, I don't know if there have been any polls on this, but the expansion, Jonathan, are you aware of what the support might be among voters in South Dakota?
I'm really not. I'm not aware of any polls. I think a lot of people are sympathetic to expanding health care. But I also would caution that it comes from what I would consider to be probably a pretty unpopular program, the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as it's called. So it would really be hard to gauge that.
Yesterday, a Senate panel killed flooded lands legislation that had been unanimously approved by the House last week, and another piece of legislation on the same issue failed to pass the Senate earlier. Roger, the meandered water issue, the flooded lands, big concern for landowners and sportsmen up in your area in the northeastern part of the state. Remind us, what is at the center of this issue?
This really has been the biggest issue up here during this session. I've done a few Cracker Barrel sessions with our local legislators, and this issue takes up 90% of the time easily. The problem is we have a lot of lakes up here in this part of the state that are growing. and growing over private property. And according to the state constitution, all water in the state is held for the public trust. So the fishermen and sportsmen think they should be able to fish this water. Well, then you have the landowner saying, wait, this is my property. I'm paying taxes on it. I don't want people, you know, fishing on my land. So it's a very complicated issue. I know we've had some legislators working up here in this part of the state all summer, basically, trying to get some kind of a compromise bill done, and it just didn't work out this session. It's incredibly complex. You're putting landowner rights against sportsmen's rights, and at this point, you know, I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen.
Why is this, Roger, such a difficult issue to reach any sort of compromise?
Well, that's the point. I mean, you have landowner rights are big in this state, as are sportsmen's rights. And neither one apparently wants to budge much. And our local state senator, Reed Holing, was working on this a lot because he sees that what's going to happen, that if this goes to the courts, one side is going to lose everything. You know, either all this water will be open for public use, or the landowner rights will prevail and there'll be no sportsman's use of the land. So there really is a big push to get some kind of a compromise done, but so far nobody's willing to compromise.
And Jonathan Ellis, do you see that there's any easy way for this this issue to be for a compromise to be reached?
Well, it's been fought over in many legislatures now, legislative sessions, and you know, part of the issue is that, you know, you talk about the courts. I mean, the Supreme Court ruled in 2004, overturned the circuit court. There were some people up in Rogers area who had sued, landowners who had sued because of these expanding lakes onto their private property. And the circuit court originally ruled for these landowners, and the Supreme Court reversed that in 2004 and basically said that, yeah, while they may own the, you know, lake beds, the fact is that the water is part of the public trust. And so, you know, and basically the court decision did leave it open to how that can be managed via, you know, via legislative direction. So, I mean, the legislature can apparently, according to this court ruling, you know, have some guidance in this area, and that's why we've repeatedly seen legislation here. But right now, as it stands, you know, the Supreme Court has sort of sided, I think, with the sportsmen, the people who want access to the water.
Roger Whittle, is this issue creating hard feelings on both sides in your area of the state, in the northwest or northeastern part of South Dakota?
Oh, it really is, without a doubt, and I think it's causing rifts between some of our lawmakers too. And another problem that makes it more difficult is that it seems to be just a problem in this part of the state. So it's been difficult to get West River legislatures and Sioux Falls area legislatures really involved in the process because it really doesn't affect them. So we have this statewide group trying to solve a regional problem.
Moving on, still talking about the legislature, though, among the bills that have been debated this session include one on whether businesses can serve certain customers based on their sexual orientation. A similar bill was in the national news in Arizona when it was passed by lawmakers there, but vetoed by Governor Brewer. Earlier this week, there was a debate on a bill banning gender-selective abortions. Jonathan Ellis, where are these bills originate? Where are they coming from? Are they coming from out of the state?
Yeah, these, as you indicated, these bills, there's a movement afoot across the country. I mean, you've seen states now recognizing same-sex marriages. You've seen, you know, people who, obviously, some religious people object to that. And under federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act from the 1990s, they've essentially been you know, trying to, I guess, in their view, defend businesses that find homosexuality in front of them. Okay, religious people, and there have been a couple instances, for example, related to weddings. There was a cake maker. I think it was in Colorado or maybe Oregon, where they objected to making a cake, a wedding cake for a same-sex marriage. There was a photographer in New Mexico, same thing, didn't want to shoot a same-sex wedding. And so, you know, across the country in various states, you've seen you've seen lawmakers introduce these bills that, you know, basically say, hey, if you objected to this, your religion objects to this, then you don't have to offer that service. Now, on the other side, you know, a lot of groups see this as you know, institutionalized discrimination, and we've got a long, sordid history with that sort of thing, and so it's a fairly emotional topic, and as you say, as you know, again, not just here in South Dakota, but in various states all over the country.
And Roger Whittle, are these, you know, given where these bills come from, still important that these are issues that are debated here in South Dakota as well as the rest of the country?
Well, a lot of, to me, a lot of these seem like solutions looking for problems. For instance, the gender selection abortion bill, I had never heard that gender selection abortion was happening in South Dakota. I listened to some testimony from Pierre yesterday where apparently it's aimed at the Asian population, and they are all upset now because of this. And like I say, it hasn't been a problem here, and yet we're almost pointing fingers at people.
Also, lawmakers have been busy discussing non-binding resolutions. According to David Montgomery of the Argus Leader, more than any year since 1988. And Jonathan Ellison, you wrote about this in your weekend column, mostly tongue-in-cheek, I believe. But you think the resolutions add a little bit of color to the session, maybe a little bit of entertainment?
Oh, they're entertaining. A lot of them are. You know, a lot of these are, first off, a lot of them are, you know, honoring sort of the state, whatever, basketball championship team or whatever, or somebody who did something in the community. And so that's what a lot of them are. But a lot of them are also sort of like just red meat politics. I mean, you know, they're meant to, I mean, they're meaningless at the end of the day. They're very symbolic. So then you get these red meat political issues that you throw out there, and the, you know, lawmakers can debate them. And it tells you, you know, for the people who sponsor them, I mean, it tells you where they're coming from in some respects politically. You know, you've got, I think, a number of them were sponsored by Representative Stace Nelson, and we all know he's running sort of as a Tea Party candidate in the U.S. Senate race. So, you know, he's trying to make, I think, political statements with these concurrent resolutions. I mean, outside of the small population that, you know, really watches the legislation, I don't, you know, they don't have much meaning beyond that. And there have been so many introduced this year, as David Montgomery noted, that there are a lot of lawmakers kind of griping about this, about why are we wasting a lot of time debating these. And I think, as David said, the most since 1988.
And Roger Whittle, do you see these non-binding resolutions as a waste of time, or maybe a little bit of entertainment color in there as well?
Well, I think up to a point it can be colorful and entertaining. When you get an onslaught of them and it actually cuts into your legislative time, I see it as a problem. I know Spence Hawley from Brookings got up on the floor and kind of raged against them this week. All the lawmakers I talk to talk about how they have such a short period of time to get their work done in our legislature, and I see these kind of things as contributing to their problem. I'm not against honoring a football team for winning a state championship, but when somebody does a dozen of them in a year, that seems a little overboard to me.
Coming up on Friday morning, the legislature's Joint Committee on Government Operations and Audit will hold a special meeting on the Governor's Office of Economic Development and the EB-5 Immigrant Investor Program. The committee will hear summaries of the reviews of the GOED's operations, and Economic Development Secretary Pat Costello will be there. Jonathan Ellis, do you expect to hear anything new out of this meeting?
I really don't. Looking at the agenda, I mean, they're going to have you know, updates of the three audits that were already done, so I expect that's just to be a rehash of what I think most news outlets have already reported on what these audits said. So I don't expect anything new there. You know, Pat Costello has already talked about this program, as has the governor's office, and that, you know, when they came on board, even before Governor Dugard was sworn in, they made it known to Richard Benda that they were parting ways because they just weren't as interested in the EB-5 program as the previous administration had been. They wanted to go other places in terms of focusing their efforts on economic development. And Richard Benda was highly focused on the EB-5 program, and that's why he was not retained by the administration. So I don't expect Pat Costello to see, I mean, they've already publicly explained that they were already moving away from this EB-5 program even before the governor was sworn in and long before there were these problems that were identified in the program. So I don't expect Pat Costello to say anything new. I mean, probably just to reiterate that position that they I mean, certainly there have been some approvals of EB-5 projects under the Dugard administration, but they're much more discriminating.
Roger Whittle, you agree with Jonathan's assessment of Friday morning's meeting?
Every word.
Every word.
Well, I think it could still come up to be a topic in the Senate election with former Governor Rounds running. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
Well, finally, during the Oscars Sunday night, Larry Pressler ran a couple of ads to remind viewers that he was the lone congressman to turn down a bribe in the Abscan scandal. That's the subject of the movie American Hustle. Is reminding voters of this helpful for his campaign, for his former Senate seat? He's running as an independent. Do you think ads like this help his cause, Jonathan?
Oh, I think it does. You know, and I'll give you an example. I was interviewing Kermit Staggers, who's a city councilor and former state lawmaker here in Sioux Falls, yesterday, and I kind of asked Kermit, you know, who he was, who he liked in the red. I didn't ask him who he's voting for, but I asked him who he liked, and Kermit, you know, he's known to be sort of a libertarian Tea Party-ish Republican. And he indicated that he liked Larry Pressler, and he liked Larry Pressler, and they were longtime friends. And the one thing he said that Kermit thought that we needed in public life right now is politicians with integrity, and he thought that Larry Pressler was somebody with integrity.
And for Larry Pressler, I'm wondering with the younger generation, people that might not remember the Abscan scandal. If Roger, this is something that Larry Pressler needs to remind the younger voters who he is.
Oh, I would think so. He's been out of the spotlight for a long time. But interestingly enough, when he came through Watertown on his tour announcing his candidacy, he said he was not going to use the Abscam incident in his campaign this year, and now he suddenly is, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I think probably because of this American Hustle, and when you say you have to reintroduce himself to younger voters, it's sort of serendipitous that it happens to be, you know, at a time when this movie is out that's fairly popular, especially with younger people, that he can at least, you know, tie himself to that. Now it's interesting. Now if he previously said he wasn't going to use that as a campaign issue, you know, then maybe he's got some explaining to do there, but I would have thought from the outset that it would be foolish not to use that.
Oh, and I would agree with that. I would have been all over it.
Yeah, right.
Do you expect that the Senate campaigns to start picking up now that the legislative session is just about over?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, Larry Roden and Stace Nelson, they've been sitting in the legislature. They've got to get out there now and hit it. And, you know, Larry was in town last week with a press conference here in Sioux Falls, and so they've really got to get busy now and ensure, and Stace has already apparently got enough signatures to get on the ballot, and we'll see which other ones can.